from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington, you're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
Brooke Sullivan is the Vice President of People and Culture at the Seattle Mariners, where she provides guidance and direction for employee engagement and experience in both the business and baseball operations units. Originally from Kent, Brooke calls Gonzaga her second home. She talks of landing her dream job and embracing challenges as they come.
Hello!
Brooke Sullivan, what is happening?
Hi! How are you? Are you at home or in your office? Is that your office?
I'm in the office. I'm in the office, yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's spring break at home. I got to get out of the way. You know, it's chaos. Nice. So,
yeah. You guys have spring break early because of Easter. Yeah, ours is not until next week. So.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah.
So cool. So excited. New season coming up for the M's. This is the year. Yeah.
It was a hard off season. It was just, I mean, this is my 11th season. I just had my 10th anniversary here, which is crazy to me to think about, but it was really a hard off season. There's just a lot going on. But there's media stuff going on. Like there's a lot of change and a lot of, you know, the team, we didn't make it to the playoffs. So it's just been a rough off season. So it like leading up to opening day didn't quite feel as, I don't know, it's festive or something, but once the game started, it's we're back in the sling. Like people are like clicking along, and even though, you know, we're not like undefeated or anything by any means, but like it's just normal. You see the fans back in the building, and everyone's happy. Even on opening day, like the lines for beer were so long, but everyone's happy and like having fun. So that just changed. Like everyone's moods just immediately. Not that they were bad. It was just, you know. It's just the grind right up till it. So.
Oh, totally, totally. Well, and I mean, the pictures looked awesome of because you get good weather.
Good weather.
Warming up nice. So.
Yeah, and then Saturday night, my oldest son had a doubleheader in West Seattle, and so then their coach talked to them forever. I was like, can we just end this? But, and I was driving one of his buddies home, and we passed the stadium on the way, and I was like. You guys want to go to the game? It was like the bottom of the fifth or something. And they're like, what? So we go in, and I mean, I don't usually, but it was kind of fun to kind of show off the, whatever. So we go in.
Yes.
That was when Julio hit the walk off. So that was it was really fun. So
it's
just crazy. Like those are the memories. Like I always think like that's something like Colin will remember. Like, oh my gosh. And he was like, that was so fun. It was like spontaneous. We didn't really have a plan and we just go in there. And so it was pretty fun. So I do have a fun job.
Yeah, heck yes. Now, and do you have, so if you're going to do that, do you have like your normal parking spot?
Yes, I know.
And you just go into your office basically.
And I did. Okay. And because thank God for technology, like I just got online and grabbed some tickets. Like we weren't sold out. So I just grabbed some tickets last minute or already going on. And so that was all lucky. So it's not like we had to, you know, but it was just fun. We sat in a section we don't normally sit in because the other tickets were gone. And so that was fun too, to be in a different area. So anyway, it's fun. So
cool. Well, I will say I went to Gonzaga Day.
Oh yeah.
I guess it was last summer at some point. It was one of the coolest things I've ever done.
We used to be, I don't know if we still are, but we used to be the biggest college night, or whatever you call it, alumni night, even bigger than UW.
That's awesome.
So I think we're still up there. I think Wazoo kind of gives us a run for our money right now, but I don't know. I think we can get back on it.
Yeah, well, they got more numbers than we do. So, but it's a super fun experience. But one more question. So when you're hanging out, let's say it's a Wednesday, there's a day game. Can you see? You got like a ballpark view?
Well, no, you can't really see. My view is actually of like the. Whatever, like I'm looking out of Reverse Avenue. Can you see the water?
I can see the
so that's my view, but yeah, I mean, yes, like actually, on day games, what's kind of funny is like you don't really get that much work done on day games.
Sure, why would you?
Everybody just kind of, you know, in my role now, I would call some of it work, like I walk around and talk to employees and whatever, but it's pretty fun. That part's really fun too, just because it's like that's why everyone is here. Yes, winning on the field is ultimately what everybody wants, but it's, you get to see like fans, like every single game, there's somebody who comes in that's never been to a game before. And so like every game you're seeing somebody, you don't know who it is maybe, but like experience it for the first time, or, you know, they're, I don't know, they're with their grandpa or their whatever. There's just, I think that's what's crazy about baseball versus other, because it's every day. It just becomes like part of your life for 6 months. It's just, it's crazy.
That's so, yeah, that's so crazy.
So, and I always loved baseball. I mean, sorry, I know we haven't, but like I always, baseball, I always, always loved baseball. In fact, Matt and I, when we met, well, when we started dating in Spokane, we would go to Indians games all the time. He loved baseball too. So
yeah, it's, they're super like, fun. Oh, they're super fun.
It was just always my favorite. So anyway,
I had a mini season ticket packet to the Mariners. I mean, I'm sorry, to the Indians.
Yeah,
which was super fun. Super fun. But
it's so easy. It's like easy. Minor league baseball is so easy. It's like small. It's not, you know, it's casual. Not that it's, but it's, I get it. There's fans who have, it's hard to come. It can be hard to get to Seattle and park, and like, it's not necessarily cheap and all that. So it's like, totally, you know.
Well, the cheapest thing you do is buy the ticket. The beer is what gets you.
I know. Although we have 450 beers.
So I was going to say, there's some sort of secret out there, because I've heard people say that you got to go to the right place to get the cheapest.
You can find it on the app. If you go to the ballpark app, you can look for value beers. In fact, I should knock on my office mate is the kind of runs all that stuff. And he knows where all the, and there's some like good beers on the value. It's not just like, that was funny the other day. We were looking at the beer cooler and he was like, so like, which one of these would you pick? And I was like, now or like when I was in my 20s, which is, you know, our target demographic or whatever. He's like, in your 20s. And I was like, Rainier. He's like, really? I'm like, yes, I didn't like a hazy IPA when I'm like 24 or something. I don't even know if they had it, but I definitely wasn't drinking it. So.
Oh my goodness. So basically you're telling me that it's a different value beer, like, am I, that's like Rainier's value today, or is it like
a, no, there's a bunch brand? There's like 10 or 15 beers, but there's like an IPA that's a value beer.
Oh,
I just don't know which one it is. I bet I could find it if I looked, but there's,
no, that's fine, that's, yeah.
So if you like, if you do it right, the problem with that is like you have to find, it's not everywhere, so you have to find it, right. And then if you're like with your family and you're just like, I just gotta get this hot dog, like you just grab whatever and you just go. So our new thing is we have these grab and go markets, which is the Amazon technology. And so you just put your credit card in, you go in, get yourself and leave. And you have no idea how much you've spent. I mean, everything's labeled, but like, imagine taking your family in, they're grabbing a hot dog and a whatever. And you're like, and then you get your bill, you can get a receipt the next day or whatever that day. And you're like, oh, well. Okay.
Sweet. That's what happens. So, right?
Hey, but it's so easy. Yeah.
You got to seize the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so awesome. But that's cool. Well, that's not what we're here to talk about today, though. So I want Brooke Sullivan of the Seattle Mariners. Take me back. Where'd you grow up? Where's hometown? Where'd you go to high school?
I'm just making sure. Am I still good here? What is happening? Am I still good? Can you hear me?
I can still hear you. Maybe, well, my hand was up. I put my hand up on the Zoom.
You're crazy. Okay.
And Jack Talbot's listening to this right now. He'll edit out all our screw ups.
So, oh, good.
He's the work study that's going to
like, make us look better. How does this actually work? Yeah. Okay, sorry. Go ahead. Start over. Yeah. My mic went out.
So where'd you grow up? Where did you grow up on the west side?
I grew up in the Seattle area, in Kent, just south of Seattle. So in my whole family, like born and raised in Kent forever. So yeah. And then went over to, in fact, it's funny, when I applied to Gonzaga, it was the fall of 1998. And so nobody knew where it was. My friends were like, what? And I was like, it's in Spokane. They're like, where? I mean, it was hilarious. And then that March, obviously, of 99, everybody, and I remember a really good friend of mine, got accepted and was going to Stanford. And so, and by that point I had already decided I was going to Gonzaga. So that was pretty fun. Him and I like had a thing, cause we played Stanford. I don't remember what round we played Stanford that year, but beat them. And, so
it was the second round.
Yeah. So it was pretty fun to like, still kind of fun to be able to say like, I had really decided I was going to Gonzaga before really it was as popular as it is now. And I was just really drawn to it. when I visited, I had applied and whatever. I had some reservations. I didn't know. I really actually wanted to go to Wazoo with a bunch of my friends, but then I applied, and then I was a golfer, and the golf coach got in touch with me and like invited me to learn more about the golf program and everything. And so I went over for another visit, and it was spring. So by then, it was really early spring, and I went over there, and we were just kind of hanging out outside of Despet. My mom and I were waiting for something, and I remember Bruce Springsteen like blaring from one of the Despet windows.
Yes.
And people were like, "We're gonna order pizza to the bench," and I turned my mom and I'm like, "Yeah, I want to go here."
This is it. But DJ Despet sold you, huh?
It was funny because I had visited before in the summer and there were no students on campus. And I was just kind of, it hadn't sold me. And then when I was there with students around, I could just like feel the energy of what it would be like to go there. And I believe it was authentic because that's what I feel like I experienced there too, yeah, which was
totally
awesome. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. And they used to have that gel weekend. Now they do a gel day. Gonzaga Experience Live, which so many stories of people be like, that's what got me. I went to gel weekend. And I was like, oh, this place is awesome. Right. So
I never did gel, but I remember gel when I was a student.
Yeah, right. You remember the flip side.
I'm kind of bummed that they don't do it anymore. I've actually told a few people, I'm like, you should see if they do gel weekend that have kids that are now graduating and stuff. So it's a popular choice of schools now. A lot of, you know, a lot of folks over here that I talk to have got kids. And they're excited about it being one of their options. And of course, I'm one of the biggest advocates of it.
Totally. You guys always have been great. Yeah. So DJ Desmet, I could be wrong, but from my understanding from students, whoever occupies that room assumes the responsibilities. And I guess there's some place where you submit requests and it just goes into the song list. Yeah.
I didn't know that was such a like a formalized, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, these kids are sophisticated these days. So, yeah, a lot more than we were, for sure. So,
that's fun.
That's awesome. So, and did you play golf at Gonzaga? I can't believe I
did. I did, yeah. So I played my freshman year, and it was great. It was a great experience back then. I mean, the women's golf team now, I follow them, obviously, and they're amazing. There were some great golfers, for sure, on the team, but they're great people. But we were not nearly as competitive overall as a team as they are now. I mean, they're just, and actually the coach now, Coach Rickle, was the coach that had invited me to campus, but then he left and went to University of Idaho. And subsequently has come back. And another big reason that I was like, man, if people like this work here, I feel like this is a place that I would want to be. He was just so like welcoming and warm and all of that. But yeah, I did play. It definitely took a toll on my grades. I wasn't like the best student athlete. So.
Well, you also were in a hard major though, too. It's not like you were.
I definitely, at the end of freshman year, I said, you know, it was not a scholarship sport back then. I'm sure that it's, you know, it's much more well-resourced. They've had the facility now, all of that. It was still a great experience, but I did not have great grades, and I knew I wasn't going to be making money in my life playing golf. I was finishing like 90th out of 100 girls in the West Coast Conference, you know? I decided I need to focus a little bit more on my studies. So that's what I did.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. Cool. So you're at Gonzaga, and then you are a glutton for punishment. At some point, you had to pick a major. Tell me what happened.
I was always pretty strong in like math and science. And so I generally knew that I wanted to do something in a field like that. And my parents were really great kind of career guidance people and would, you know, suggested engineering. They said, you know, look into maybe an engineering, you know, we talked a little bit about accounting, and they were very good at like connecting me with people that they knew that did those jobs. And so I remember I went to an engineering firm and kind of visited with some people, and it sounded really interesting. It also sounded really hard, like really hard. And I've never like shied away from hard, but it didn't draw me as much as I'd always been drawn to business in general. And I think, when I started thinking about, okay, I was narrowing it down to the school of business. I knew I, you know, was strong in kind of math and science and all of that. And as I learned more about accounting, I think what I found when I was informational interview people and try to understand like what it meant to be an accountant, it just felt like it gave a very good overview of business, and you could see very broad, you know, every part of the business somehow by studying the financials and understanding how companies make money, how they spend money, important decisions that are made based on that financial information. So that's like the good answer. The other answer is I remember thinking, what majors have people that come to campus and hire, like on campus? And I'm sure there were others, but like that one was very, very clear to me. Like I knew the firms came to campus and hired Gonzaga students. And I remember back then, you know, I'm drawn to, maybe not so much as I've gotten older, but I was always really drawn to excellence. Like I really cared about excellence. And we've always had such a strong pass rate of the CPA, like back for so long. And I know we have just a very storied history in accounting, having like just strong professors and students and people giving back in other ways. So I don't think I knew that part at the time, but I knew like we had excellent pass rates on the CPA. And I'm thinking, well, that must mean we're doing something right. Like if people are passing the exam, you know, something is going right. So those were the kind of things that really kind of helped me dip my toe in. I don't really remember what year that would have. I mean, it must have been sophomore year. I can't really remember when you decide all of that. But really, I do credit my parents with having me explore things. And then just the excellence that Gonzaga showed in that area was a big draw for me also.
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. But then you had Eddie Beer for intermediate. And you're like, what have I done? Right? So...
Oh, Dr. Beer. I love Dr. Beer so much. He's one of my favorite people.
Same here.
I remember, I mean, it's so silly now for me to think about like intermediate. I think he scheduled it like, it was like 7:45 a.m.
Yes.
And I was like, that's so early. Like it felt painful. And I'm pretty sure he did that on purpose. I mean, he had a reason behind it. And I think I did, you know, I did okay, I think, in intermediate one. I don't know.
I wonder if we had that together, because I transferred and I went to Florence, so I didn't take it till my senior year. And then I had a victory lap.
I think we did. We either had one or two together. I remember you in class, and I don't remember if it was one or two, but I do remember you being in class, or maybe we had both.
That's a great question. Were you, I want to say back then there might've only been one section.
There might've only been one section.
But were you in Dr. Beer's class for 9/11? Were you?
Because
maybe we had cost or something different together. Because we woke up that morning and it was happening.
Yep.
And then I think, you know, we had to go to class at some ungodly hour. So, because it was early in the morning on the West Coast when everything was going down.
You know, I may have skipped class that day.
Really?
And, you know, I was in student government and we were planned, like, I remember meeting with like Sue White in the student life office. And because we were talking about what we were going to do, like for a vigil, like what I remember spending a lot of that day. The other thing I remember that day was all of my friends, because I was junior year, and a ton of my friends were going to Florence like days later, including my now husband.
Right.
And we weren't dating at the time, but I remember thinking, you guys are still going to go. And he flew out September 14th, 2001.
Wow. Wow.
It said it was, you know, had to have been one of the safest times to travel, totally. Frankly. Like, yeah. People in Europe loved Americans. Like, it was, I think, a great experience for him. Well, I know it was a great experience, but yeah, we did have to get up at an early time to hang out with Dr. Beer. And I also remember not taking a too quick of a turn here, but my first introduction to the song Zombie Nation was Dr. Beer.
What?
Uh-huh.
How does that
in
go
academy,
on?
Before a test, he played this song, and I was like, what? I don't think it was being played in the kennel yet.
I don't think so either.
And I was like, what is this song? Like, what is this? And he played it. We were going to take a test, and he just had a, I don't know, CD player. I guess probably back then. I don't think we had him, you know,
wow.
Whatever. Yeah. I remember that.
He still has a CD player, just so you know. So I'm going to figure out this out because it must have been before. So what I was told by Mark Spink that we got Zombie Nation from Illinois, that where there was maybe like our senior year or something like that.
Yep.
We played them at Illinois at I guess it's called Assembly Hall, and they said everyone was lined up on the baseline and they were doing that, and they were just like, he was like, this was everyone on the Zags was like, this is super intimidating, and they killed us by like 30.
Yeah.
And so they brought it back, but yeah, that's
crazy. I very distinctly remember, and I thought, is this a soccer thing? Like, because I think his kids played soccer or something, and I thought, I wonder if this is, I don't know, and I don't know why we played it before an accounting test, but I'm sure I passed that one with flying colors.
You nailed it. Yeah, you got a bump, like a 3-point bump, just because you got pumped up.
But I will say, so the other funny thing, and I back to sort of what, I don't know, what drives me or whatever, like, generally, if somebody thinks I can't do something or says I can't, I'm like, well, I'm going to show you. And I've never actually asked him this, but, and I don't think Dr. Beer ever thought I couldn't do something, but I remember having a conversation. I wasn't doing so well in one of his classes. I don't remember if it was one or two. And I remember having, you know, I went into office hours and there was a conversation that was something like, is this the right major for you? Like,
totally.
You know, do you think you can do, you know? And I was like, oh, I'm going to show you. Like, yeah. I'm going to do it and I'm going to get. I still to this day, I'd love to actually talk to him about it. He may not remember. I have a feeling he read that about me or something. And I think he also cared because he was probably like, you could probably do better than you're doing. Do you really want to? Like, what are you? Like, are you here for this or not? You know? But I really do credit him with that because I think I was like, oh, I better start taking this actually, like, seriously. It's hard. It's hard stuff to learn. And you can't just show up and think you're going to like absorb it. You actually have to do the things the teachers are telling you to do to learn what you're trying to learn. And it matters. It actually, you will use it when you go do your career, you will use the things that you learn. So I do love Dr. Beer. In fact, he just sent me a message on LinkedIn about my 10-year anniversary at the Marriott. So nice. He still messages me, you know, about Mariners things and all these things. So I just, that's the things, that's what I love the most about Gonzaga is those relationships and everything that you build and stuff. So the other really impactful person to me was Dr. Weber. I took tax, whatever they called tax one or whatever, yeah, the first, yeah, kind of tax course. And actually at that point, I thought I was going to go into tax. That's what I thought I would really want to do. And I really credit that with how much I love Dr. Weber. I just thought he was so passionate and he taught so well. And I got involved with, is it VITA? Is that what it's called? Like,
yep, VITA,
you help,
yeah,
with the tax preparation. And yeah. I just cared a lot about all of that. And I think then the problem was we didn't have a full did we have a full master's of tax? I don't think
No, we had a Mac, and they offered a Mac a tax concentration, mm-hmm, in the Mac, but it was like two classes in Jepson, four classes at the law school.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it just sort of practically, it just didn't sort of pan out that way.
Right.
But Yeah. Great people.
So you mentioned you were GSBA. Were you vice president? Secretary? What were you?
I think I was secretary.
Okay.
Secretary, which was interesting. You know, I was secretary because it was not an elected position. It was something you actually applied for.
Okay.
And then the executive board would hire you. And I think that year, the president was Andy Van Pelt.
Okay. Yeah.
And Sam Reed was like, I think, a vice president. Siobhan McDonald, who was also an accounting major, was a vice president. So I met so many people through that. A lot of people from your class, frankly.
Right.
And Siobhan actually ended up becoming like my, I don't know, she was something in my seat and lineage or something like that. So all these connections kind of come back together. But and funny enough, Sam Reed and I see each other all the time at kids' sporting events over here.
Awesome.
Small world.
So. That's awesome. Yeah. Sam Reed, athletic director at Seattle Prep. Mm-hmm. Came out. Do you recall, so we were just talking about 9/11 and you mentioned GSBA. There, I believe a student kind of organized the memorial on campus.
Mm-hmm.
I believe her father might have been in New York Fire Department. Do you remember the details of that, or is that something I just totally made up?
No, there was a student that the night on September 11th, the night of, we did a big candlelight vigil.
Okay.
And that was immediately, but there is, I believe, there's still a memorial at Crosby.
Yep.
Like outside of Crosby. And it was a student who, I do think it was her father.
And I think he was fine. I just think
he was fine, but I think he lost some, she was from New York.
Yeah.
I think he lost some, but you know, some teammates, colleagues. Yeah. But she, you know what? She spearheaded a lot of that. She actually did, which was awesome.
Yeah, and I wish I remembered the name, but I don't think I ever knew her personally. It's redone. It's bigger now. It's cool. It's still there.
Oh, that is Crosby, cool.
So, yeah.
I know it's interesting when things like that happen when you're in college, I think, because you're an adult, but you're still like forming your adulthood and who you are as an adult. And, you know, versus I think about big things that have happened, like for my kids and their, you know, even COVID and stuff, like they were really in like the safety of our house and us with them. But you go to college and you learn and something like that happens. I just think it's it ends up forming a lot of how you, I don't know, learn about the world and deal with scary things. And I remember not feeling scared, but feeling kind of like, oh, like I have, like I'm an adult now. Like I have to kind of understand the world in my own framework and not just my parents, you know?
Right.
So yeah. But it was interesting living and being in Spokane because you're so removed from like the big stuff that was going on related to it. Even, you know, I think Matt, my husband, being in Europe, there were memorials everywhere and like vigils set up for America. Like there was a lot of stuff all over the world. And I think I always felt very safe in Spokane. Like Spokane just felt like a very safe, I still feel like it's home, part of my home, just because it's just such a safe community. And probably specifically Gonzaga, but Spokane overall, I definitely felt like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm from Spokane, so it's easy for me to agree to that. But yeah, there's definitely a coziness to it. You have to be careful. You suck you in, and then you get stuck here. So, okay. So you hustled through accounting, and I believe you were Green Dot. You went to Deloitte. Did you go to Deloitte?
I was Deloitte. Yeah. Yep. I did the 5-year program. So I did get the master's. And I started at Deloitte with a few other folks from Gonzaga, big class. We had big classes because at that time, that was right when Sarbanes-Oxley had kind of come into existence and everything was still really being figured out. I mean, as you remember, so there were quite a few of us and they gave us a lot of responsibility right off the bat, which was, I don't know, scary thinking back to
it. Yeah, scary for sure. Figure this out. I don't know it either. So, because it's new, somebody's got to figure it out. So,
yeah.
And then, so, I mean, but that's not what you're doing today. So kind of give me the,
yeah,
weave me through this crazy career and choices and things like that.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I, you know, when I joined Deloitte, I really did not have a long-term plan. I thought it would be a launching point for my career. I really thought of it as like, I'll be here and then some opportunity will come up that I'll want to do somewhere else. And like many people, after 2 or 3 years, you know, I got a little itchy and I kind of started exploring what it would be like going to a different job in private, you know, working in a corporate accounting department, and actually interviewed at a couple of places. And I remember thinking like, it wasn't anything bad, but just, I looked around and I thought, I don't think I'm done learning yet. Like I wasn't ready to move to a place where like, you just can learn so much at, especially big firms. I think all firms, because you can learn from, you know, all the professionals and all of their experiences. I just remember just feeling like, I don't think I'm done learning at Deloitte yet. So I stayed at Deloitte for quite some time. There was a point where I thought about doing a career change at Deloitte, and I filled in as the recruiter for the campus recruiter for, you know, a maternity leave, 6 months or something, while our recruiter was on maternity leave. And that was fun and I liked it. And then I kind of thought, well, I still really like accounting. So I was back into auditing. And I spent almost my whole career auditing at Boeing, at Deloitte on the Boeing engagement. That was my main Boeing commercial airplanes, and that was my main engagement the whole time. I also got to do some other fun, smaller things. Like I worked on the Seahawks. They did some agreed upon procedures. I had another client, Linden Transport, which they have all these different shipping. They have trucks and barges and all different kinds of, you know, moving product around. And that was fun. Also a private company, family owned company. So that gave a different flavor also to a different kind of business. Cause obviously Boeing was huge and we were just one part of it. So that was pretty much my whole career there. And then I actually, Deloitte, I was saying this, and I know a lot of people who are like listening or know anything, you know, everybody knows this, but you work really hard at these accounting firms.
Right.
You know, you work really, really hard. You also have a lot of fun. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, training and like learning opportunities. You're with so many peers. I look back so fondly on that time. There's a group of about 10 of us that still regularly get together, like socially, and everybody, there's now somebody's a CFO and, you know, I'm here doing this work. Like everybody's off doing whatever else, but we still come back and get together. I mean, my husband coaches a little league baseball team with the husband of one of my first friends at Deloitte. We've known each other for that long. So you really form some really tight connections. So that was great. When I had my first child, I always kind of thought I maybe would want to be a stay-at-home mom. I'm going to go all over the place here for a minute. I always struggle with like long-term plans. I just cannot make like a 5-year plan to save my life. I don't know what I want to do in 5 years. Even now, I don't know what I want to do in 2 years, you know? And at Deloitte, I would always say, you know, as long as I've had more good days than bad days, and I'm learning, and I'm, you know, I'm feeling like I'm contributing, if I look back on the past year, I'm going to commit another year. Like that's about as much as I could ever commit. Yeah. So then, you know, along came baby number one. And I thought, you know, I think I want to be a stay-at-home mom. So, I did that, and I did it for about 2 years. I actually had another child during that time. But as my husband so gently and lovingly pointed out, I wasn't really being a stay-at-home mom, because in that time, I started teaching classes at Lake Washington Technical College. I was teaching some accounting courses. I was doing some like volunteer work, which, you know, isn't necessarily, wasn't like paid work, but I was out of the house doing this. And he's just like, do you want to go back to work? Like, is this, it's fine. And he was super supportive of like whatever I wanted to do. But he's like, it seems like you actually want to have a job. I was like, I think I do. Yeah. So I started thinking about like, what was the need in the area? What was the need in kind of the county world? And I was really passionate about nonprofits. And I saw a need for like a business that I could run and be like a consultant and set people up for their, so they could, smaller nonprofits could, you know, deal with their financials, book their transactions, just not massive ones, but just these small ones that just needed a little bit of help, kind of maybe getting something up and running. So that was my plan. That's going to be my plan now. So I start reaching out to some of the partners at Deloitte, and this is what I'm thinking. Do you guys have any contacts? Like, who do you, you know, all that. And then there, one of them was like, why don't you just come back and work here? And so I went back to Deloitte after all of that. And so, and then I know this is a long, kind of long story, but as we, and I loved that I was working in the audit practice, but I was kind of working in some operational planning. So staffing planning and, you know, making sure we were trying to be as efficient as possible on audits and some things like that. And one of the partners approached me and said, hey, the Mariners are looking for an assistant controller. Do you have any ideas of anyone? And I was like, oh yeah, let me think about this. And I thought of a couple names for her, and I go home and I'm mentioning it to my husband, and he's like, are you crazy? That's like your dream job. Like, what are you doing? So I think it had not crossed my mind, because if I'm being really honest, most people that had been at Deloitte that long weren't going to be assistant controllers at like a private company. So it felt like it seemed initially to me like a step back or not the right career progression. And I think the thing I learned from that really is, you know, it doesn't always have to be a step up. Like, if it's something you really care about and, you know, you're passionate about the product or the service or whatever, and you're getting in, you can start to make an impact there. And then you can kind of look at the next, you don't have to have every step planned out the whole way. And so that's what I did. And in fact, a couple of the partners at Deloitte, you know, again, like lovingly, were like, are you sure that this is the move you want to make? Because it is a, you know, was kind of lateral salary and it wasn't, and all that. I'm like, yeah, I love the Mariners. Like, born and raised, I'm a baseball fan. Like, I want to go make an impact there. So that's how I ended up at the Mariners. Bored, that story.
Go on.
I'll continue. I know no one ever told me that I don't know how to talk, but so
I love it.
So I, you know, I was in the finance department. Everything was great. There was a lot of, we were working on for the first time, there were multiple companies, the Mariners. So it was their first set of consolidated financials. And so that was the main kind of reason they needed another resource in. And so I worked a lot on that, and I luckily was able to hire another Zag, Monica Marmolejo, who I think you've already spoken to on this. Yep. On this show.
We have. Yes.
And I remember saying to my husband when I hired her, I was like, man, she's going to outshine me. And I can't wait. Like, she's so awesome. I think so highly of her. And I've always felt like you hire people who are better, like hire people who are better than you, and everybody continues to get better. Yeah. So anyway, we brought her on, and I can tell, like, I don't know, every 5 years is I get a little like itchy, like I need to do something. I don't know, you know, and so it was about maybe 5 years in, and there was a change in the HR department. And so I approached the leader and said, you know, I'm ready for a career change. And here's kind of my history. Like, I had spent some time in recruiting, some time in sort of staffing, and, you know, I would really love an opportunity I would love to take some of what I know from like my time at Deloitte and background and continue to try to make us better here. And really, luckily, she kind of took a chance on me because I didn't have exactly like all the boxes ticked on a, you know, resume of what a HR director at the time would be. But I think she probably saw that, like, I can figure things out. You know, it's not And if I go back to like, truthfully, I think, and I think this now, if you studied accounting, and if you, or, you know, or any rigorous degree, like if you study something and you do well in it and you go, you know, and you're working and you're successful in those, you don't have to have every single box ticked in a job to do it, because there's a lot of things you can learn on the job if you're willing to learn and try new things and take risks and be willing to fail. And I'm assuming that's part of kind of what she saw. So that's how I ended up in this department. And then, you know, over time, it's just been kind of increasing leadership roles, and which has been really great. And I do feel like I'm very impactful in this role, being able to impact, you know, the people, processes, and trying to make work easier. That's kind of one of our things, is like, how can we make work easier? Because make easy things easy so that you can focus time on the hard problems that is why you're here. Like, that's why we hired you. We want you to help solve these hard problems. So very long-winded. Thank you for listening.
No, I love it. Now one thing comes to mind. You're coming up, your current role, your VP of people and culture, right?
Yes. Yep.
And so I'm assuming you report directly to someone in the, I don't know if there's a CHRO.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's not, we don't use that title, but that is what she is. She's the CHRO.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you're coming up on 5 years, right? So what's the next?
Well, interestingly, like, I'm not necessarily itchy for a big change, but we have gone through, I mean, you know, in the 6 years I've been in HR, we've faced, I mean, one of the biggest disruptions, I think, in work, COVID. I mean,
right.
The navigating that, and then, you know, I believe we did a very good job of taking a very traditional culture of like fully in person all the time, like 8 to 5, and, you know, taking advantage of the opportunity that we saw how people can work in other ways and other places and other, you know, formats. And so we've carried that forward. There's still a lot of in-person time because we have an in-person product. Like, what we do is come to the ballpark and watch this, but there's a lot more opportunity. And that, I think that's really kind of helped our culture, is to understand meeting our employees where they are a little bit more, which has been really great. We also did a full ERP implementation in the past year or so. We implemented Workday for both our financial and HR processes. And that took my entire, I mean, that took all my time. And so my itchiness is now more, in fact, I just got done writing kind of my goals for the year. And one of them is specifically about setting aside, like, time blocking at least 5 hours a week, just making connections with people. Like,
that's awesome.
Because that was kind of missing from the past year. So that's my itchiness. Like, I got to get away from my desk a little bit more and spend time with people. But I think as I get a little older, I don't know if it's age, but I don't get that as much. Like, I just want to be impactful and like make an organization better. So I'm here for a while.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you are, I'm guessing, but correct me if I'm wrong, you don't oversee the athletes, the players. You're like the structure of, you know, the finance department.
Yeah.
Give me how many employees are we talking about? How many? Give me some idea of the structure.
Yeah. So overall, in like the business operations, we have about 200 full-time employees. Wow. And that ranges from, you know, our operations team that runs the ballpark, and then also, you know, our finance team, procurement team, ticket sales, marketing, communications, and then our team, I'm probably missing a few groups in there, but legal, obviously, some of those. And then the other half of the company, there's two presidents. We have a president of business operations and we have a president of baseball operations. Okay. And there's about 200 employees on the baseball operations side also.
Oh, okay.
But from scouts to coaches to analytics to, you know, all the things in baseball operations. So our department, people and culture, actually does support both sides of the business. And how that looks for us is we have an HR manager who is partnered with the business operations and one that's partnered with the baseball operations. And they're kind of the go-to for any kind of recruitment, you know, performance management, you know, data reporting, like anything like that. That's sort of their first point of contact to go to. We're very lean. We also have on our team, we have a learning and development manager. We have a kind of a systems person. We have a benefits director. And we have a few other kind of support people. My counterpart also is overseas culture and our DEI efforts. So we have some of that also, but we're not a huge HR team for how big our organization is. And so I have to think of a better word for this when we're actually recruiting, but we really need, like, you kind of have to be scrappy. Like, you kind of have to be here and be able to figure out how to, you know, sometimes it's like just kind of getting things done. And it's not exactly as maybe as what I would have been used to at a Deloitte, with like very well thought out, like this process, like step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sometimes it's a little more zigzaggy than in a big company.
Now, random question. Is there a gym facility you can use in
there is, there is, okay, awesome. There's a gym facility, but a lot of times we actually will just like walk the warning track.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. Get some fresh air. And
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, do you ever, so when you're in the gym, you're not next to like the pitching squad or anything like that?
No, they have their own. Yeah, yeah. The Major League team has their own. We actually use the visitor clubhouse workout facility. So yeah.
Have you ever been, now these are totally random, have you ever got to open the roof, pull the lever?
No, but I would love to do that. That would be really cool. I'm a little scared. There's like a catwalk or something that everybody's like, have you been to the catwalk? And I'm like, I'm afraid of heights. So I don't think I'm doing that. But there's some other, you know, being on the field is something that probably at this point in my time here, I take more advantage or more for granted than. Because when I really think about it, I'm like, man, I'm down on like a Major League Baseball field. That's pretty cool. We're not supposed to step on the grass, but you can walk the warning track.
So what, that's actually my random question. Are concessions, are those contract or are those employees too?
Those are contract. Yeah, we work with Sodexo.
And they basically take care of all that. It's not like the Mac and Jack's concession is, if there is one, I don't know, is or Georgetown Brewery or whatever. It's not.
There's just a few kind of niche things that we will have in the ballpark. We have a new concession. It's called Tamari Bar, and the owner has, I think, 3 locations in Seattle. So every once in a while, we'll bring in and Marination, which is a popular food truck and restaurant in West Seattle. They have a few locations. So those are kind of like private contracted with, but most everything is run through our third party. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
What kind of care does the grass get? I mean, I it's got to be a process. I'm certain of it.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's funny in the off season. Well, and it's been interesting. So I'm probably gonna get this wrong, but we hadn't put new grass down for, I think, 18 years. It was 18 years with the same grass. I mean, obviously they're overseeding it. I don't know. Our old groundskeeper, I'm like, can you give me some hints? Because my yard looks terrible. Right, like, totally. What can we do? And he would just laugh. But you know, I know they do some stuff. But for a long, it was 17 or 18 years, we had the same grass. And then we hosted an event in the winter a few number of years ago called Enchant. It was like a light show. And it destroyed the grass. Yeah. And so they had to resod it. And now that happens a little more frequently as we're having more things like concerts and other events in the ballpark, which is great. We're able to give other people who might not be baseball first fans kind of experience being in the ballpark. And and our hope is like, maybe they see it and they're thinking, oh, maybe I should come to a game. This would be a great place to, you know, bring my family and have some other kind of entertainment. So,
yeah, I want to say, now I know you've had, I think you had the Winter Classic there last year, right?
Yep. Yeah. Just this last New Year's. Yep. It was,
that looked really, that
was
awesome.
Really cool event. Yeah. This last year was huge because we hosted the All-Star game and then we had the Winter Classic. I mean, it was a very, it was a very crazy 2020.
Big stuff. Was there ever a football bowl game in there maybe at one point?
I think before me, but I think there was. The other thing we have coming up this weekend is the high school baseball classic. So there's a number of baseball teams, high school teams that get to come and play on the field, which is pretty exciting for them too. So
yeah. Well, it's an incredible facility for sure. And I want to say you may have organized at some point some kind of event on the field for us. Maybe not. Was it like a dinner on the field or something?
Well, yeah. And we did, you know, we actually had, not to bring it full circle, but we had Dr. Beer's retirement party here.
Okay.
I think it was a celebration of Dr. Beer. I think it was at his retirement. And I don't remember where we had it, but it was in the ballpark.
It's super cool.
Wow. So there's lots of ways that the ballpark is used for different groups, but you know, mainly baseball is still our bread and butter and our main thing. So
what's your favorite part of your current role? What you do?
You know, I get really excited about it, and why I really wanted to come over to the people side of things. I actually was having a meeting earlier today with our learning and development director, and we were talking about plans for this year for both kind of low lift learning and development opportunities and then some more formalized programs. So everything from a monthly brown bag where each department is just going to come in and share something about what they, you know, what they do. Like our baseball operations department could talk through what is arbitration. Like everyone hears that, but does everyone know what goes into that? You know, something like that. Maybe the draft strategy, you know, just talking to us a little bit about what they do on a regular basis. Same for some business ops, you know, sharing about, you know, when we have a concert, what does that mean? How much money do we make? Like all of those kind of things. So from that all the way to, you know, the thing that got me really excited was we're talking about in January, hopefully we can pull this off, but to have anywhere from 3 days to a week. We haven't come up with a name yet, so if anyone has a good name for us, but basically it would be a dedicated learning and development week where everybody, even remote employees, would come in. We'd have, you know, some keynotes. It would almost be like a little conference we would host for our employees. Because I think that we have a lot of opportunities to build some more like learning and development into their time here and make us all better, make them better as individuals, you know, make our overall organization better and be a great place to work. So that's what gets me really excited.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, you know, you've always been, I think, so I've known you for some time on and off, I suppose, man, there's probably a good decade in there where we didn't have a lot of interactions, but, open to opportunities, pretty clear with your career path and really kind of interested in doing the right thing. You have an incredible story. What advice would you give the freshly minted Zag as she embarks or he embarks on a career in whatever, in anything?
I mean, I think, you know, I think there's a couple things that I have learned the most, honestly, and we didn't even really talk about this stuff, but from times that I've tried something and it didn't work. I mean, like, it's very scary to think about failing. And I think especially when you leave college, because you've been in the safety of your family, then you're in the safety of your university. And I think one of the things I love about Gonzaga is the push to try new things there, because it's a very safe place to learn that failing is a good word. Like that means you tried something that was hard. It's hard for me to say like, don't be afraid of failure, because that's just like, that's advice that would have driven me crazy when I was like 22. Yeah. But I think it's about, you can be afraid of it, but if you're afraid of it, you know, still do it. And just think about all the good things that can come from what you can learn from it. And that there's no, like, nothing's permanent. I mean, there are certain things, obviously, that you want to be a little more careful with, but you know, if you try something in your career, or if you go for a project at work and it's hard and you don't, and you're not perfect at it, it's still going to be better than not doing anything, you know, and there's so much to learn from it. So say yes to new opportunities. And the two other things, one other thing is I've always, and I have felt this lacking in my life in the past year or so because of the project I was on. Connections with people is the most important thing to be successful, I think, in anything that you do. Genuine connections. And I think it's about, and this is another thing what I love about Gonzaga, I've never met a Zag who won't like go out of their way to help another Zag.
Totally.
And it's not because of anything they're going to get out of it. Like there's no, you know, and so how do you, that lesson or that whatever, however that's instilled in us there as Zags, that is one of the most valuable things that everybody, and that is one of the reasons I'll always hire a Zag, because I know they have that. I think those are the two things, is just, you know, and I often speak my mind, and I always have. I haven't been, but I'm open to be having my mind changed, and that may be more the older I get. I think I'm very open to now hearing, like, I pretty quickly give my opinion on things. In fact, this has happened quite often recently in leadership meetings. I'm like very outspoken. I say what I think. And then someone else will say something. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a really good point. And I think, and I think that doesn't mean like maybe I was wrong, or maybe I didn't have all the information yet. And you shouldn't be afraid of having your mind changed, because that means you're learning, you're continually learning. And if you make connections with people and they trust you and you trust them, you know that you're coming at it with good intent, and those conversations, even if they get a little tense, you're going to learn something from it, and you're both going to get better. So I think those are the things that, you know, I don't know if that's advice, but those are the things that I don't know that I knew when I was first out of school.
No, that's perfect. That's perfect. Now, one more question. Do you get to meet the players? Are you friends with the players?
I mean, I am definitely not friends with them. I'm probably like, I mean, if we're being honest, Dr. Brasich, we're getting to be the age where we could be their parents.
Okay, all right.
Some of them, no. But we do, you know, we do get a chance that it's very, some of the really cool perks are bringing my kids. We have a front office autograph day where they get to come and like get an autograph from all the players. And that's definitely, you know, that's so cool for them. My husband and one of my kids was down in Arizona a couple weeks ago for a baseball tournament, and they went, and one of my coworkers gave them a tour, and they kind of fist bumped at Cal Raleigh. And so, you know, that stuff is pretty cool for the, especially for the kids. But if I'm being honest, when Griffey came through the tunnel, when he was being inducted into the Hall of Fame, he did a welcome thing here. I was like, yeah, okay. That's my fame. You know, I get a little starstruck by that compared
absolutely.
To the players. Absolutely. I mean, they're all great. There's really great, you know, if you're not a Mariners fan, like read about some of our players. They're really great people. They have great stories. And I think a lot of, you know, the connections and all of that is a lot of what they're building in that team as well. Which tells me that we're going to be successful. Like, I don't know if it's going to be this year for sure, but I think when you're a team and you just like want to fight for the other person on your team, like you will find success. You will find success. So
believe, as they say.
Believe. We're going to do it. It's going to be the year. And this is what I've heard people saying. 24 is a very important number in our organization.
It certainly is.
And 2024, here we are. So it might be destiny.
Yeah, the hope of the new season, right?
Yeah.
So. Well, hey, so great to see you.
Well, thank you. It was so good.
Yes. To see you. Cheers. This was awesome.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the G Suite podcast. This episode was produced and hosted by Andrew Brasich and edited by Jack Talbot. To find more G Suite and many other podcasts on the Gonzaga Podcast Network, remember to check out gonzaga.edu/podcasts. Thanks again.